Hello, friends. I'm Chris Chavez, and welcome back to the Sidious Mag podcast. This is my show where I chat with some of the biggest names on the track, on the roads, within the coaching ranks, and across the running industry. Our guests sit down and open up in depth to share their experiences, brilliant insights, and vivid snapshots from their professional and personal accomplishments within the sport. Before we start the show, it's Thanksgiving week, and I wanted to share this episode before many of you travel to see friends and family across the country. I just wanted to say that I'm thankful for all of you who listen to this weekly. A special thanks to those who financially back us on Patreon. If you want to consider joining them, hit us at patreon.com/sidiousmag and contribute whatever you feel most comfortable with. Thanks to Michelle Frank and Nina Coolidge for joining the club. You can also support us with a one-time donation over to Sidious Mag on Venmo. Attach any message you want and we'll shout it out on the next pod. One last thing, sponsorship slots are now open for 2023 on the Sidious Mag podcast and the Lab Count newsletter. If you want to reserve some space to promote your brand, product, or event to our followers and listeners, don't hesitate to reach out. Email chris@sidiousmag.com for a full list of our offerings and our rates. It's one of the most direct ways to tap into our dedicated following of track and field nerds, running super fans, coaches, and other fantastic people within the industry who appreciate our commentary and our storytelling around the sport. Spaces are limited, so we look forward to hearing from you soon. Thanks to everyone for their support. Enjoy the holidays. My guest for this episode is Chelsea Sodaro, who made history last month by winning the Ironman Kona World Championship women's race and becoming the first American to win Kona since 2002 and the first American woman to win since 1996. One of the most impressive parts to all of this is that she accomplished the feat just 18 months after giving birth to her daughter Skylar. Chelsea was in fifth place going into the run before clocking a 2:51 split on the marathon. That's after swimming 2.6 miles and biking 112 miles. And she won by almost 8 minutes. It's super impressive. It was so great to catch up with Chelsea, who was a pro runner when I actually started covering track back in 2012. And I followed her career through her final track race in 2016 at the Olympic Trials. So we go deep into her journey on how she found her calling in the triathlon, some of the highs and hardships from her pregnancy, what track and field can learn from another sport, and of course, that epic day in Hawaii. So without further ado, here is Chelsea Sodaro. All right, Chelsea, I think the last time you and I ever did an interview together, it was probably at the mix zone of, you know, either Hayward Field or maybe at one of those Stanford invitationals, and life has changed a lot since then. So welcome back to welcome to the Sidious Mag podcast. But on top of that, the track community is going to be so, you know, happy to hear from you again, just because of all the recent success you've had, and you're a star once again. So thanks for taking the time to do this, Chelsea.
Thank you so much for having me, Chris. This is super fun. And I've really been looking forward to chatting with you because I am a huge fan of yours and like a massive track nerd. So the cool part about me doing triathlon now is that I get to totally fangirl on track and field. So this will be fun.
No, I'm looking forward to it because I guess like to start, right? When you stepped off the track in 2016 at the Olympic Trials, I had to go back and like kind of look up when was your last track race. And I think it was, you know, the trials in 2016. Did you kind of at that point figure that this is it with me and the track, or what were your initial thoughts then?
You know, I was in a really kind of dark place coming off of the Olympic trials in 2016, I was sort of bouncing around coaches. I couldn't find a situation that was really working well for me. I was always injured. Right after the trials, you know, I had a shocking day there. I thought maybe I'll try the marathon and like give it a go on the roads. My shoe deal was about to expire and it was going to be tricky for me to like financially swing running at a professional level. And a week into marathon training, my Achilles blew up on me and I was back in the pool cross training. becoming a fan of triathlon from the comfort of my couch. But honestly, I was super lost. I was super lost. I remember having this moment. My husband and I had just moved to Flagstaff, actually, because we loved it there. And we thought, like, I'm kind of doing the lone wolf thing. And at least if we're here, I'll have a lot of people to train with. And we loved the community. But I just remember this moment in, like, our little rental thinking, what am I doing with my life?
The timing of this, right? Like summer 2016, obviously big Olympic year. And in the triathlon community, again, another sort of crossover, we see Gwen win the Olympic gold medal. So were you injured, I guess, at the time of that taking place? And sort of it kind of did inspire, you know, women within the track and field community, but also the conversation went a little bit more mainstream about USA Triathlon and that program they have where, you know, it's they take some track athletes or swimmers and really try and develop them over, you know, the three disciplines. And so there we saw or started to see, I guess, more people giving that a shot. Was that, you know, an early light bulb that went off for you?
You know, I had started to become a fan of triathlon. One of my college coaches, Ann Detmer, had run at Wisconsin with Gwen Jorgensen. And so even back in 2012, I was hearing about Gwen's story of how she had transitioned to triathlon, how quickly she qualified for the games in London, and obviously had this insane run weapon. So I kind of like noticed from a distance what was happening. But it wasn't till 2016 really that we had three medal hopefuls in Sarah Chu, Katie Zafiris, and Gwen, that I started to really kind of follow more closely. And my husband and I were actually watching the games from our couch, and he looked over at me and said, I think you could do that. I think you could be really good at triathlon. You're always cross training. You know how to bike and swim. So maybe that could be a good option. And I just laughed at him. I thought it was the most ridiculous idea, but we had a carbon frame, bike frame that had been given to us, and it was a bit too small for him. So he got it set up for me, and I would just sit on his wheel, Chris. My husband is a sub 4 minute miler. So he's a stud athlete himself. So anyway, we would go out for these rides on Lake Mary Road, and I would just hang on for as long as I could, like tasting blood in the back of my throat. And I joined a master's group, and I wasn't good, but I was really enjoying that process of improving every week. You know, when you start something new, almost like every practice you see improvement. And, you know, for me to get my 5K time down a couple seconds, that could be years or it would never happen. So I was really like kind of getting addicted to that process of getting better. And I just got more and more obsessed with this idea of triathlon and initially was really pulled to the Olympic pathway. I ended up joining an ITU squad in San Diego that had produced a couple of Olympians on the men's side and has now produced Summer Rappaport, qualified for the games in Tokyo. But I immersed myself in this really high level triathlon program. I didn't really know what I was doing, but I just kind of like jumped in with both feet and went for it. So I think maybe ignorance was bliss at that stage.
So it basically was going all in on triathlon. But once you got healthy, was there that itch still to maybe sign up for, you know, a 5K or 10K on the track? Or was it just sort of like, I know that this is just a piece of a bigger plan. And maybe, I don't know, like, how did you feel about leaving track?
I think kind of going back to those kind of post-trials emotions, I think I was so lost, honestly, that I was just looking for something to hold on to and for something to give me purpose. And I never really processed that transition until a couple years later when I ended up leaving the ITU circuit and moving to the long distance triathlon. I think at that stage, that was in 2018, I kind of finally confronted that Olympic dream and letting go of that. But at that stage in 2016, when I initially moved to triathlon, I was just, yeah, I just kind of dove in and got wrapped up in that new environment. And, you know, you're training like 25 to 30 hours a week because I was just so tired. So all in that I don't think I was really like that hung up on moving on from track. I do remember doing some workouts in the spring of 2017 where I was like, I'm actually pretty fit. I don't know that I could PR in the 5K because, you know, at the level, at the, you know, national, international level of the 5K, that's like so specific, the training that you have to do for that. But I thought maybe, I bet I could PR in the 10K off of this kind of training. But of course, I never jumped on the track.
So that time, I guess, like, can you speak a little bit more to that letting go of the Olympic dream? Because there's such a big population of runners, I think, who get wrapped up, at least like on the pro side of things, about it's Olympics or my career really wasn't all that great. I mean, yes, you can run really fast and have these great shiny PRs, and I think that's worth celebrating, but it can also be unhealthy to invest so much emotion in the games. And triathlon, at least, like, it seems like opens up more doors to, all right, my career doesn't have to be defined by this one event that happens every 4 years. There's other, you know, there's being world, you know, world champion or going to Kona, that, you know, it's, it seems a little bit healthier, right?
I think so. When I got towards the end of my stint in ITU, I was in my late 20s. I was living in a different city than my husband because he was working in San Francisco and I was training in San Diego and basically on a perennial training camp. And I ended up winning a World Cup in triathlon in Huatulco. And I'm like in Mexico by myself, and you expect it to be this incredibly defining, exciting moment where you just fulfill this big goal that you've been working so hard for. But I cross the finish line, I'm by myself, like there's no one to celebrate with, and it felt super empty. And I knew at that moment that something wasn't quite right. Like I just got to this stage in life where I needed more. Like I needed more, something more fulfilling, or at least like the process of going about my career needed to be about more than just me and my performance. And you know, the hard part about track and field is that so much of the like extrinsic reward is about the Olympics. And of course, like the structure of sponsorships and all of the rules that go around that rewards that performance on one day every 4 years. And the really cool thing about draft legal triathlon or non-draft triathlon, like the Ironman circuit and what the Professional Triathletes Organization is doing, we can talk a little bit more about that later, but there's massive races all of the time, every single year, you know, like Kona happens every single year and we have the world championships every year or most years in track. But I think that in triathlon, at least, Kona is really the pinnacle of our sport. Like that's where it was born on a grand scale. And I've been to Kona 6 or 7 times at this point, but it wasn't until I experienced the race actually that I was like, I get it. Like there's something really magical about this event. You know, it's like in the sport of triathlon, I think it's that experience that really feels like professional sport with all like the fanfare and the spectators and the spectacle that it is. So yeah, that's all to say that in triathlon, I think that there are other opportunities to get that experience outside of the Olympics, especially, you know, on the non-draft side.
Can you give me and the listeners, I guess, a little crash course basically on, you know, the different leagues and the setup within triathlon? Because I think that's something that people may not be as familiar with. And then, you know, it's also sort of, I feel like there's certain aspects that track could always take a page out of this and like learn to be a little bit more organized and, you know, have some better structure to it. So I guess what does that look like and what drew you to, you know, the Ironman distance?
Sure. So there are kind of, to simplify it, there's like two main disciplines within triathlon. There's the draft legal side where we ride road bikes. It's kind of a criterium style bike. And then you have non-draft where we ride TT bikes, which are what you would see like during the time trial or the team time trial in the Tour de France. And depending on the race, the draft zone is different, but in Ironman races it's 12 meters. And then in challenge and PTO events, it's 20 meters. So basically the goal with non-draft is it's like an individual time trial effort to see what you individually can do. Like you don't get the benefit of drafting off of other cyclists, which is a huge advantage, huge energy saver. In draft legal triathlon, there's a few levels of like racing. There's the Continental Cup level, World Cup level, and then WTCS level, which is like the highest level, all the top like Olympic caliber athletes are racing on that. And then there is like a Super League, which is kind of a newer addition to that circuit, which is really dynamic, exciting, super high level racing. It's like a short little season that they have. And there's been like a lot of money invested into that. So it's a great opportunity for the top athletes in that discipline to like really earn better living. In non-draft racing, we have the whole Ironman circuit, which includes 70.3 half Ironman races and then full distance Ironman races, and Kona is part of that. And then we have Challenge Series, which is another sort of like competitor to Ironman. That includes like Challenge Roth, which is also a massive event in Germany. And then we now have the Professional Triathletes Organization, which is like an athlete owned body. It's like a combination of a startup media race organizer that is like incredibly groundbreaking. We had two opens and the Collins Cup, which is like a Ryder Cup style event, team event. Mm-hmm. And we've had a lot of investment going into that. There's an athlete board. The organization is doing really cool things. Like they have a maternity leave policy, which I have benefited from. And yeah, it's just like a new, exciting series. And I think a big will be like a future of our first sport.
Yeah. That's the one I think that I see. I'm like, all right. Yeah. No, that's what track is missing in a way.
You know, I was just dying the other day, Chris, because I told you I'm a big fan and I listened to your coffee club collab podcast. And hearing the guys talk about like, they brought up Super League, but I think they need to look into the Professional Triathletes Organization. You know, they were talking about like billionaire investors and getting like more autonomy for the athletes. And anyway, I think that track and field probably could take a page out of our book. And we had Michael Johnson announcing one of our races recently. So
yeah, I know he's definitely one of those people who in like some of these meetings behind the scenes of like how we can improve the sport has been vocal. It's like, guys, it's like we're behind here. And it's like, it's, you know, there's other sports that are doing it. There's really no excuse for us to kind of make some changes. And I think we're way overdue for some changes within track. So as a fan, when you kind of, you know, stepped away, it's actually pretty, the timing of it was where you become a track fan starting around 2017, 2018 and start to watch from afar. Like what was exciting you around that time within the sport? Because I guess like it was also kind of the rise of the super shoe era and all these times just start dropping across the board. So for you to become a track fan all of a sudden, what were you loving, I guess, seeing from afar?
Even though I think there is like work to do from an institutional, like organizational level on track, like the performances are just insane right now. When I was first coming up through the ranks, I ran 15:10 when I was 23 or 24. And that was like, that was really good. You know, now if you don't run under 15 minutes, like, whatever you, I mean, just to kind of make like be considered a contender to make the finals at USA's, right? Like all those women are running under 15. It's incredible. So that's been really fun to watch, just like the professionalism, like from the individual athletes and just how high the level is, you know, how many women are like under 4 or hovering around that level. And then gosh, our like road racing scene, our marathoners are just next level right now. So, and I think there's so many good personalities. And of course, social media has made it easier to follow athletes like Kira D'Amato and Alphine, and you know, you like really get to know them better. And of course, like I have some personal relationships from my time in track and field, and it's been fun to like really see some of those athletes continue to flourish and thrive.
So speaking of the marathon, we're recording this the week of New York City Marathon week. I think like there was that year I think it might have been 2016, right after Gwen had won. She signed up to run the New York City Marathon. You with this 251 marathon leg that took you from fifth to first and is one of the fastest of all time. Has a thought crossed your head, I guess, at least, of when we may be able to see you just test yourself over just a marathon? Don't worry about the swimming and the biking. We just want to see how fast you can go over 26.2.
I would love to throw on a pair of super shoes and rock up to the marathon. I think, you know, I have a few more really solid years in Ironman triathlon, and I just have a huge love for Kona and that distance. But yeah, it excites me to think about what I could maybe do. I was really a middle distance runner when I competed, you know, as a professional. And I think I'm learning now as I get older that maybe my like true talents lie in the longer stuff. So I would be super curious, definitely maybe towards the end of my career, my late 30s, I would, want to check that out for sure.
What was the learning curve like, I guess, not only to jump from, you know, track to triathlon, but then triathlon to Ironman, basically, where it's like now it's like you're going for the longest distance and like it seems like a much harder effort.
So I grew up on a bike. I'm from Davis, California, which is Bike Town, USA. So that's just how I got around town as a kid. And I never raced a bike, but that aspect of the sport came really naturally to me. I think that the skills from running to cycling, at least from like, you know, a physiological standpoint, it's quite transferable. You look at Mike Woods. I don't know if you've had Mike on the podcast, but
no, I haven't. He's on a short list for sure. Kyle gets on me all the time about how I should have him on. Yeah.
Yeah, I know. I don't know Mike actually, but he has talked about wanting to do triathlon in the future when he's done with his pro tour career. So I might have to nudge him a little bit. Anyway, Mike Woods, incredible runner, pro tour level cyclist, Olympian on the bike. Anyway, so I think that skill is quite transferable if you can learn how to handle your bike. And that's just something that came pretty naturally to me. Like I felt really comfortable on the bike. I love the, like the dynamic aspect of, yeah, handling it, and like felt quite comfortable in a pack pretty quickly, which I don't need for long distance racing now, but that certainly helped me when I initially started triathlon. And then the swimming was a huge challenge. I grew up in the pool, but I was not a great competitive swimmer, but I did have some background, so that helped. And then I was swimming 30 or 35 K a week for the first couple of years. So 6 to 8 swim sessions every week for a long time. And I was immersed in a really competitive environment. That was sort of a sink or swim situation where like I had to make the send off, like there was no option, like you just have to do it. And that's of course like the benefit of training with people who are better than you. So that really helped me when I first joined that ITU squad. And then the transition from ITU to long distance was way smoother than I would have expected. Like it takes some people a while to get used to that time trial position because you're like bent over the bike, you're really stretched out. It's just like it's a totally different bike, first of all, and like a different experience of riding it. But I loved it like from the moment I got on it, because you go really fast. Mm-hmm. Like you're very aerodynamic, and I just loved it. And then the swimming in non-draft is a bit less physical than it is in draft legal triathlon. And so that was like easier for me. I was like always quite intimidated by the physicality of the ITU swim. So moving over to non-draft felt like a bit more chill from that aspect. But yeah, of course, like when you move to doing more endurance ultra events, you need to learn how to fuel and you need to learn how to hydrate. And you just have to be really intentional about practicing that and figuring out what works for you.
So it was sort of set up where it's like, all right, the swim, the bike, and then the run. It was just sort of like you were only getting stronger as the race progressed. So where does your confidence go, I think, when you come off the bike into the run, knowing like if I'm within, you know, X amount of time, I've got a shot to win this thing, because it is where you were coming from another professional background.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it takes some people a while to get used to that feeling of running off the bike. for some reason, for me, it just sort of clicked very early on. Like, yes, you don't feel like you just never feel good, basically. But I was just able to sort of get it done and execute. And my mindset when I get off the bike is like, time to go to work. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, it's always a relief to get off your bike because the bike is quite long. And I just have this hunting mentality of being ready to hawk people down. And there's such long races that you never know what could happen. Like, even if it's a 10-minute gap, for instance, that's not insurmountable because people, you know, they get their nutrition wrong or they make mistakes. And I'm just ready to capitalize on those.
That sounds like a totally different thrill than anything you could experience on a track 5K or a, you know, a track 10K, because those are just like latch on and survive and hold on for as long as possible. And maybe you can pick someone off in the last lap or two, but this is, you're playing a game as it goes along.
You know, what I've loved about triathlon is just having a lot more agency and control over my career and my destiny. And, you know, everything doesn't go your way and things happen like they do for any professional athlete. But I think I've kind of found my calling, so to speak, in sport, which feels very fortuitous. Like, who gets to change sports in their late 20s and make a career out of it? So I feel like really lucky that I've gotten a second chance at pro sports and that I've kind of gotten to do it on my own terms. It's been really fun.
The Sidious Mag podcast is also supported by Garmin. If you follow me on Instagram, you've probably seen me showing off my Forerunner 955 Solar. It's my favorite piece of running tech because it's jam-packed with so many features that make it more than just a running watch. Garmin has successfully done that across its entire Forerunner line, because when you're not running, it's gathering everything from your body battery, your sleep record, HRV, stress measurements, and so much more for free. You don't need to have a separate subscription, and you don't need to wear a secondary device now. Personally, I've been putting a major emphasis on recovery. So to understand how your body is recovering and to get ready for that next training session, Garmin has improved its sleep monitoring feature. After waking up, you'll receive a sleep score as well as a breakdown of your sleep stages, and they'll also provide some additional insights for improved sleep quality. There's nothing better than seeing that you scored a 90 on sleep. Get the most of your training and take things to the next level with Garmin's Forerunner series. I've been wearing it for a couple months now, and I'm still discovering new features and apps along the way. Visit Garmin.com for more information on the Forerunner 955 and the Forerunner 255. It's the series that Runner's World says is, quote, more accurate than ever. Visit Garmin.com today. In a way, it was, right, a second chance at a new sport, but then within that second chance, you also decided to start a family in 2020. And it's sort of then you're at another sort of crossroads where it's like you want to continue doing this thing, but you just don't know how difficult it's going to be. I guess the decision to start a family, how did you go about approaching that?
So at the end of, I had a really great season in 2019. I think I won 3 or 4 70.3s. I was fourth at the World Championships in 70.3 at my first time at that event. And thought, like, the sky is the limit for me. It's all up from here, baby. And my training was going really well at the beginning of 2020. I was rolling, having kind of the best, like, preseason of my life. And the pandemic hit. And, you know, it was pretty clear that we weren't going to have many racing opportunities. And I think my coach at the time said, this could be a great opportunity to, like, you can make this into a great opportunity to improve or, like, work on your weaknesses and just get better as an athlete. And I kind of had this, like, flip in my brain that was like, or I could use this as an opportunity to start my family. And I kind of had this sudden realization or, like, pull to have that in my life. I was like 31 at the time and just felt like kind of similar to when I like stopped chasing the Olympic dream. Like, I need more and I want this. And what better time to try than right now? Initially, I'd envisioned really giving Kona a few good cracks and then maybe trying to have a baby in my mid to late 30s, but you never know how that will work out. And it's, you know, it's hard, like, for female athletes with, you know, you don't know like what the fertility situation is going to be like. If you have a great year, it's really hard to take the next year off to have a baby because you want to capitalize financially on that success. And of course, like, I have a very supportive partner, and like, he was like really wanted to start our family as well. So yeah, we gave it a go. There's this really great video clip of me towards the end of my pregnancy saying, so I'm gonna, you know, have the baby hopefully on the due date, and then I'll take like 4 or 6 weeks easy, and then I'll go back into training, and then I'll race, and then I'll qualify for this race. I'll be 5 months postpartum, but everything will be great. And I just laugh now in retrospect because I had no idea what the comeback would actually look like and what it would really mean to be, you know, training full time with a newborn. Of course, like, you can hope and assume that everything will go smoothly with the birth. And even if that's the case, like, you don't realize what that sleep deprivation feels like. And suddenly your whole life isn't about you. It's completely devoted to keeping a little tiny human alive. So it has been quite the adventure.
Yeah. So coming off of your track career at this point, like, we're say around 2019, the conversation publicly starts to take place about, you know, the maternity clauses in contracts within track and field, and how in many cases it was really bad, and like, you know, reductions and, you know, pay being frozen for a long period of time. And so you at that point are out of track. How did you, and now, I guess in 2020, you know, being pregnant, how did you assess, sort of, was triathlon in a better space when it came to those protections for, you know, female athletes and for mothers? Or is that something that you learned kind of while you were pregnant?
You know, we had gotten to a place financially where it wasn't so like scary or do or die. You know, like, I had had really good success. My sponsors were very supportive, and I had a feeling that that would be the case, but, you know, we're still at this stage in 2022 where I've had a lot of people say to me, like, you're just so lucky that your sponsors continue to support you through pregnancy. And I am, I really am. I've been working with, Team BMC for 4 years now, and I'm so lucky that they supported me through pregnancy and birth and the comeback. But I really feel strongly that we need to get to a place where it's not just luck of the draw that you happen to have partners that support you. It's like status quo standard that companies in our industry value female athletes through all the phases of their careers. But we also had started the Professional Triathletes Organization in 2020, and the organization was incredibly supportive of all athletes during the pandemic. They actually paid us our end of year bonuses, which were substantial, during the season to help us like survive not making prize money, because that's how so many athletes live. And then their maternity leave policy was launched at the beginning of 2021, which I started to benefit from towards the end of my pregnancy. But I think that, yeah, there in triathlon in this moment, there is a sense of like value for female athletes and for mom athletes, and yeah, championing us through like all of the phases of our career.
Mm-hmm. I think in this video that was very beautifully put together by, you know, the PTO with you about your pregnancy, there's a point in it where you do say, like, I don't know if I'm going to be able to, you know, keep going, or like, you seriously considered quitting triathlon a couple times within, you know, the past 18 months. I guess this video came out recently, so you're talking about, I guess, like the last 18 months during, you know, the pregnancy. And so for what kept you in it, even in those moments of doubt?
I would like to say that it's my own like will, but honestly, it's my husband. Like, there's no way that I would still be doing this if it wasn't for him. Childcare has been incredibly challenging for us. I didn't really start to feel like myself physically until the summer of 2022. So over a year after I had my daughter. And, you know, like, I think so many moms will relate to this, but you just feel pulled in all of the directions. And I can't tell you how many times I have like said out loud, I just feel like I'm failing. Like, I feel, if I'm like, you know, kind of pursuing my career in the way that I want to, I feel like I'm failing as a mom. And if I'm being present with my daughter, I feel like I'm failing in my career. And so there's a lot of times where it's just, I just have had this sense that like, I can't win, but I think that it's about like enduring that and like doing the best with the resources and the time that you have. And ultimately, I think that's a big reason why I was able to pull off the win in Kona, is because like, I am used to this kind of constant chaos. I'm used to things going wrong. I'm used to like having to do the best that I can with what I have. And like, even though there has been like so much darkness and struggle in the last 18 months, there's also been like a lot of joy and this new sense of purpose and like this new, like profound love that I have in my life. And I think that that's hard to beat.
Mm-hmm. So when you did kind of before outline what you envisioned the comeback to look like and how a lot of it was just kind of like thrown into a flux, what did it look like, the highs and the lows? Because now that we're having female athletes be a little bit more public about that comeback, we can see it when Alfyn Tuulamok gets pregnant and then is trying to train to come back for, you know, the Tokyo Olympics. And maybe the race didn't go according to plan, but she did everything she could. And I think a lot of people can take inspiration from, you know, the path to get there. And what we previously didn't get to see was just sort of the emotions of, you know, when Kara Goucher ran the Boston Marathon just months after having a baby, it wasn't as pretty. And it was, you know, she was fortunate that, you know, she's very talented and ran well, but it wasn't this picture and as inspiring as it was in retrospect because of everything that she was going through kind of behind the scenes. So can you kind of, I know it's a long time to sum up, but sort of that comeback process for us, like, how was that like for you?
Sure. Well, you know, like from the moment that I had my daughter, I just, your life just changes in the most magical way. Like, I think it's this incredibly profound love that is incomparable to anything else that a person can experience in life. And not that motherhood or parenthood is for everyone, because it's not, but at least for me, it was just this like, wow, like in a way, this like heaviness, like, okay, this is real responsibility. Like, this is really like, what it's all about for me. And, you know, we had some like initial like feeding health issues that my daughter dealt with. And so like our breastfeeding journey was super, super hard. And, the sleep, you know, the sleep deprivation is real. I remember, about 2 weeks in, I said to my husband, like, I don't know what people are talking about. Like, I'm fine. Everything is great. I could do this forever. And then 2 or 3 days later, I thought like, oh my God, I don't know how I'm going to keep on going. Like, it finally hit me, I think, once some of the hormones and like adrenaline were off. But, so the first like couple months were super intense from just like a feeding weight gain standpoint with her. And then, it's really hard to train 20 or 25 hours a week when you don't sleep. And I had this deadline of trying to qualify for a big race at 5 months postpartum. I actually needed to race at 4 months postpartum to qualify for the race. So I got back to training, like proper training, at maybe 6 weeks postpartum. I went to altitude camp in Boulder at 3 months postpartum. And in retrospect, it was all really crazy, and I'm not quite sure how we did it, but you just do what you have to do. And I qualified for the race. I raced this big event at 5 months postpartum. I had a really solid day. Actually, I thought I'm in a much better place than I imagined I would be. I think I could give the world champs a go. It's going to be 3 weeks later. And in my last big session before the world champs, I got a stress reaction in my fibula. I think like the combination of, not sleeping, breastfeeding. My daughter had a milk protein allergy. So I'd like cut out all dairy and like beef and soy from my diet to make sure she could drink my milk. And so I just had an energy deficiency issue, which I like didn't really think about because I was so tired and just sort of plugging away, honed in on like getting things done. But I would say the hardest part of the process was like the psychological aspect, which I didn't anticipate. And I like really, really struggled with postpartum anxiety and like some postpartum depression. And I think we're talking about it more, but it can be like quite debilitating, especially when we're expected just to be so happy and so joyful that we have this new beautiful baby. But there's, like another darker piece that happens for a lot of women, and definitely something that I have struggled with. And like, I'm not totally out of the woods with it. Like, I think that, motherhood has really changed me, and like mostly for the better, but there's some like mental health things that I really need to stay on top of now.
When you make it to the start of that first race back, is there any part of it where, was it in the weeks leading up to it that you kind of had to remind yourself how to flip that switch to be a competitor for the next couple hours? Or like on that starting line, was it nerve-wracking, I guess? And what were the feelings there?
I had done such a good job in the couple of weeks leading up to this race of convincing myself that I was ready to go. And for some reason, I convinced myself that I could be contending. It was a half Ironman at 4 months postpartum. And I'm like, I'm not sleeping. I'm trying to be a really good present mom. I'm like peeing my pants on runs. Anyway, so I think like structurally, I maybe wasn't in as good of a place as I thought that I was. But I was racing Boulder 70.3, and I really convinced myself that I could contend at this race. I'm not quite sure like where that came from, because I was failing a lot of my workouts, but I think just the competitor in me wanted to believe that I was back. And like, as a new parent, I also wanted to think like, yes, I have a kid, but also I'm still me and everything is good. And I ended up getting sixth place, and I got passed with 500 or 600 meters to go. And like, I do not get passed in triathlon. I do not get passed. So I was devastated. I was like devastated, but I ended up qualifying for the Collins Cup, which was a few weeks later, and started to feel a little bit better about it. But in retrospect, I'm very impressed with what I was able to do those first few months. I don't know that I would do it the same way again, but, yeah, it's incredible what like female athletes and women can do when we do have like a great support system around us. And my family has just been like next level.
This show is presented by Velus Recovery Footwear. Velus is an active recovery footwear brand designed to help you restore, revive, and re-energize before and after you train. After 2 years in development, this team has created the world's most comfortable, supportive, and lightweight active recovery shoe in the world. We talk a lot about high performance and training on the Sidious Mag podcast, but I want to take a second and tell you about something equally important to performing your best, and that's recovery. This is something that I've learned over the years, and I can't stress it enough. Take the time to recover properly. One recovery trick is to make sure that you're putting on the right footwear after your run, because your feet take a beating, whether you're training or you're racing. And a new brand that Kyle and I have discovered over the last couple months is Velus Active Recovery Footwear. This brand was started by three athletic footwear industry veterans that really know what they're doing. They created what they call Tri-Motion underfoot technology that cushions, supports, and flexes in all of the right spots and is engineered to let your feet heal faster and better. Plus, these shoes are so lightweight. I've been wearing them for a while now and absolutely love them. I rock them to and from a track workout. Kyle puts them on after races. Velus Active Recovery Footwear should be in your footwear mix and part of your plan to perform at your best. So check out Velus Footwear at velusfootwear.com. That's V-E-L-O-U-S footwear.com. Grab a pair today and get 20% off with discount code SidiousMag20. Use capital C and capital M in that discount code SidiousMag20 at checkout. Now you can experience what recovery footwear should feel like. I've seen the win in Kona described as like a shock win. And I'm not going to pretend that like I've paid attention to every single, you know, triathlon race in the lead up to it. But why is it being kind of described in that way? I know you, because you did have success before the pregnancy and you made a full return back. So did you fly under the radar and kind of like, why was it a shock to so many other people but yourself? Or you could say it was a shock for even you.
Yeah, I definitely flew under the radar, which was great because I had basically zero media requests during race week. So I just got to chill for the most part. But I did my first Ironman at Ironman Hamburg in June. And I had the second fastest debut ever. And at that point was the second fastest American of all time. But I got beat by a woman named Laura Philipp, who's German. And she went the second fastest ever time, like second fastest ever across the like full distance. And so I think that maybe my performance was overshadowed, rightfully so, by hers. And not a lot of people took notice of it. And the women's field at Kona this year was like the deepest field ever. So we had two former champions there. Daniela Riff was on the starting line, and she has won the world championships five times in Ironman. And there were, yeah, several other women who were incredible. So I was not on anyone's short list for the podium or the win. I'm not surprised by my race. You know, like I trained really well on the lead up. Things were clicking for me on like in training and on race day, but I just did what I had prepared to do. Like I executed my swim, I executed my bike, and I did what I was capable of doing on the run. And I like never added up what that could result in, but I'm not surprised by my execution or my race. I am surprised by the margin in which I won. I didn't dream or imagine winning this race in my first time there. I thought that I had the skill set to win there one day, because I think those conditions really suit me. I've like been meticulous in my preparation for the race. But yeah, you don't allow yourself to go there. At least I had not allowed myself to like go there. And even during the race, I led for 19 miles of the marathon, and I just didn't allow myself to imagine that moment until I got to the finish line. You know, like so much can go wrong in these long races. Like you could cramp, or you could twist an ankle or whatever, like anything can happen. And so any time I thought about like, oh, maybe I could pull it off, like I just shut that thought down, and I just stuck to my plan.
That's okay. So that answered sort of what I was going to ask next, because when did you allow yourself to realize like I could win this thing? But I guess it's not until you were able to see the banners and the flags and all that stuff towards the end. But coming off the bike, which is my favorite point, I think kind of like go inside your head, because you know how good of a runner you are, but you see this deficit ahead of you. At that point, did you at least tell yourself you had a shot?
You know, I didn't tell myself that I had a shot at the win, but I was just curious to see what I could do. And I think it was 3 minutes or something, which is nothing for an Ironman marathon, especially like with my background. And I think that a lot of people forgot about maybe, or just didn't realize my background because I haven't been running like myself since I haven't had my daughter. Like, it's just taken a while for me to get my legs back under me. So I think that maybe like if people had been like paying attention a little bit or noticed kind of my trajectory, even this season with how I was improving, it wouldn't have been that surprising, but I was just curious to see if I had the legs, because you never quite know like if you'll have the legs on that particular day. But it was really quite clear to me from the first couple Ks that I was like feeling good, because I had to tell myself to slow down. And of course that's dangerous. Sometimes you can just go out way too fast and pay for it. But it was more like just trying to tell myself to, yeah, relax and let it come to me, that I didn't need to press. But I was, yeah, getting the good splits on the watch and making up time really quickly on the women in front of me. And yeah, I think I thought I can catch them, but I didn't think about like that putting me in a position to win, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. What I kind of love from seeing the videos from it is that spectator wise, like the crowds are on top of you. There's a lot of people also who you're passing along the way. What are you hearing, I guess, in those moments?
I didn't expect. So the first 10K of the race is on Elite E Drive. Or no, yeah, it's on Elite E Drive. And it's 5K out, 5K back, and it's lined with fans the whole way. I'm seeing all these people that I know cheering me on, giving me like time gaps. And I was so pumped up. Like I don't know. I think I'd like to think I'm like pretty humble and like just focused on like myself and my job or whatever, but like I was hyped. I was so pumped up. And so I think that was like making me run a little faster at that point. Like we just don't get many of those experiences in these endurance sports where like the fans turn out. Mm-hmm. And like you definitely get that in that first 10K. My husband and my like team director for my team, they were like riding all over the course, so I got to see them and get updates throughout the whole race. And it's an American woman hasn't won since 1996, and so I felt like kind of the hometown girl there, which was amazing. Like so many people rooting for me and cheering me on. And it's like funny what moments you, cause I was really in my zone, but there are certain moments that I, you know, I like remember and picked up on, and it's so cool. Yeah.
I mean, the stats are pretty incredible how it all just sort of came together. First win by an American woman since 1996, first woman or man to win their Kona debut since 2007, second mom to win the world championships. Of all those moments, you tap into certain communities, right? You have the American audience, the triathlon community in general, which is huge. Then in addition to that, you know, the moms as well. What has that sort of reception been like? I love kind of tapping, asking what your DMs must look like on Instagram or something. Like, I'm sure you probably haven't been able to get around to every single one, but it's that mix of personal stories that you get, and just like hearing that you inspired, you know, a college girl or a high school girl, but then, you know, the moms out there as well. So like, have you had the time to vet through every single message?
I don't know if I've gotten to every, I'm trying to get to them. I'm trying to get them all to them all, Chris. It's been really cool. I think just the like encouragement and how I've been received by my peers is super cool. And also from some like of the track and field athletes, like Emma Coburn and Colleen Quigley. And I don't know, some of these, and Molly Huddle and Alicia Montano, like some of these really badass ladies that I either competed with or just, you know, I'm a fan of, have like congratulated me. And that's been really cool. But the most impactful part of this entire thing is the moms who reach out to me and they say, like, they tell me like what it's meant to them, and how like it's given them, it's made them feel like they have permission to like chase their own goals, or they've like signed up a race. They've signed up for a race because they've seen what I have been able to do. And just like, it's so hard when you're a new mom to like carve out that time for yourself. And there's a lot of mom guilt, but like, I just want people to know that like they deserve to take that time for themselves, and that it's going to make them better parents. And that if like we can fill our own souls and like feel better about ourselves, we're just going to be more present and like better parents to our kids.
No, I think that's beautiful. And I also think, like, you know, I'm sure there's fathers out there who also feel the same exact way. I remember a couple months back, I think Peter Bromka wrote something that was pretty good about just kind of like how he feels sometimes when it's like, oh, I got to go out for a 2.5 hour, 3 hour run. That's like time away from your kids. And like, you don't realize it when, you know, what you're putting out is like, I'm chasing these big lofty goals. But at the same time, like, you're taking some time away and making sort of that sacrifice. So I'm sure, you know, there's that side of the community as well that you're, you know, definitely doing a big part in inspiring. So, no, I mean, it's just sort of, it's really funny to kind of, you know, when you rattle off all the track names out there, it's like, oh, Chelsea graduated from track and now she's off doing all these amazing things. And that's how, you know, we're really happy for you in that sense.
Thanks, Chris. That means a lot. I feel like I get the best of all worlds. You know, like I still feel like in this weird way that I am part of the running community, but I also have my my triathlon crew as well. And I just have like so much respect for both communities because I know what it takes and what we all like endure to chase our own goals. So yeah, it's just really, really cool.
When you said that it's taken a while for you to feel like yourself on the run in Kona, did you feel like yourself, or do you still think there's that potential to maybe even go quicker than that very impressive marathon split?
It was only in the last 2 or 3 weeks leading into Kona that my run training really kind of took off to sort of pre-baby levels. And that gives me a lot of confidence that I can, yeah, that there's a lot more to give. I feel like this is just kind of a starting point for me, especially in the full distance. And I'm excited to see what I can do, you know, the farther I get away from childbirth and even the more consistent training I have under my belt. I feel like a beginner still, as weird as that sounds. And that's a really fun place to be at.
No, I love hearing that. And especially because, you know, again, I keep bringing up like the PTO documentary that was done on you. Again, triathlon is just further along than track and field when it comes to some of the storytelling. Like, that was so well done that, you know, I'm excited for the sequel to and the next series that they decide to follow you along for, because it's really cool, this ride that you bring the fans along. And, you know, it only makes them more invested the next time that you do, you know, get back on a starting line. So yeah, it's just another kind of petition that track needs to lean into storytelling a little bit more, so that and take some cues from triathlon.
It's no secret that, you know, the personalities in track and field, and of course, like, I know the American side best, like, that's what I follow most closely. Like, it's no secret that we have like incredible personalities and stories there. Like, people come from all different places and all different backgrounds, and to compete, to make teams in the US, like, you have to be an insane athlete. And I think that, yeah, the more those stories are out there, the more people will want to join for the ride.
All right. So, final questions I ask every guest. If you're familiar with the show, I've been doing these for a while. First one is, what's the funniest drug testing story that you've got? This could be from your track days, or I guess from the triathlon days.
I do know about these questions, but
it's been a while since I've done
them.
Yeah.
Oh,
it's been a
goodness.
While since I've done them, I
okay,
guess.
Okay. Let me think about this one. Ooh. That's tough. I don't know if I have like a specific one, but usually I'm just the longest one. Like I'm there for the longest. I'm there for the longest. Yeah, like it has been a 3 4 hour
Ooh.
ordeal for me. After Ironman Hamburg, actually, it was a pretty overcast, cold day. I did not pack snacks for drug testing and I couldn't walk. Like I had so much like muscle damage and quad failure that like sitting down on the toilet was like I couldn't sit down on the toilet alone.
Oh no.
So that's a humbling experience if you want to be brought back down to earth real quick.
Oh man.
Yeah.
All right, next one up is if you could go on a run anywhere in the world with anybody from history, assuming they could hold a nice conversational pace with you, they don't have to be a runner, they don't have to be anyone real. Where would the run take place and who would it be with?
The run would take place on Mount Tamalpais,
Okay.
and it would be with my running coach and like one of my favorite people in the world, Magdalena Boulay.
Okay, amazing. Yeah, I was kind of waiting for her shout out at some point throughout the podcast. I'm glad we got it
No, we had to get it in.
in.
Magda is amazing, and like I would not be doing this without her. She was my coach at Cal for the first couple of years and then coached me post-collegiately and has just been like in my corner through it all. And yeah, a really incredible person to know. Yeah, be on Mount Tam with Magda.
That's a good one. All right, final one is you get 25 shots from half court on a full size basketball court. If you make one, you win $25 million. But if you don't make any, you go to jail for 25 years. Would you attempt the shots?
Hell no, like I have a kid. I've got ballet classes to go to, like maybe proms down the road. Like I cannot miss. Yeah, whatever. We joke like we like talk about what kind of athlete my daughter would be, and we're like really pulling for tennis or golf or something like that. But I have a hunch that she'll be into musical theater. Something totally different than sports.
No, that's good because so I don't know. I always think of my life is very heavily involved within running, and but the best moments are when it's a Friday night and I can turn off the running brain and just focus on watching, a musical on Broadway here in New York City or something not running related. So no, that'd be a good excuse and a great way to spend your time. Chelsea, I appreciate you taking the time for this. This was so exciting to catch up, and I'm sure you've got some track geeks who are listening to this who are like, well, now I got to tune into her next big race. So thank you so much.
Thanks so much, Chris.
That does it for another episode of the City of Smack podcast. Thanks for listening and supporting. If you enjoyed this episode, share it with a friend, leave a review and rating on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. If you want to contribute and support the show, you can also back us on Patreon by visiting patreon.com/cityofsmag or send over any tip or one-time donation over to City of Smack on Venmo. You guys are all the best. Thanks for listening. Legs are feeling good. I'm Chris Chavez. See you next time.